From my microphones in downtown Washington, D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We have Shannon Blaylock today. She is a parole and probation officer with the Kentucky Department of Corrections in parole and probation. She is a parole and probation officer. She is with Parole and Probation Intelligence, and she is also dealing with fugitive apprehension. What we are talking about today, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be offenders, criminal offenders using social networking sites, Facebook, MySpace, Dig, 10 tons of others. Also, the issues of using handheld computers, commonly known as cell phones, by individuals who are under the supervision of parole and probation agencies throughout the country. But first, our usual commercial. We are truly grateful, and when I mean truly grateful, we truly are. We're up to 230,000 requests a month for DC Public Safety radio, television, blog, and transcripts. We are just impressed, as impressed could be, in terms of the numbers and in terms of your interaction with us. We really appreciate it. What you can do is go to media.csosa.gov and leave a comment. That's what most people do, or they get in touch with me directly by email, which is Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D dot Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, and that's P as in pumpernickel, P-E-S at csosa.gov, or follow me directly on Twitter. That's twitter.com/Len, L-E-N Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, without any breaks. Back to Shannon Blaylock. Shannon, you've been with the state of Kentucky for what, about 4 years now?
That's right.
And you have a very interesting background. Part of your job as a parole and probation officer is to do the usual things that so many parole and probation officers do throughout the country. But somehow, some way, you started stumbling onto this concept of social media sites in terms of fugitive apprehension, correct?
Yes, that's right. I had I was supervising a caseload, a regular caseload, and one of my offenders absconded supervision on me. And at that time, our network servers blocked the use of MySpace and Facebook and, you know, other social networking sites the way many government agencies do. And so when I was at home one evening, I decided to look him up on MySpace, and sure enough, he was there. And but the profile was set to private, so I took a look at his wife's profile, found her, and found that she'd posted a landline phone number on one of her friend's comment sections.
Oh, that's
interesting. I was able to trace down to Florida and get him picked up.
You know, that's just amazing. So you sat at your desk and apprehended a fugitive.
That's right.
Now, think about that. Think about that. In all of my law enforcement experience, when we are trying to apprehend fugitives, or when we are trying to apprehend people wanted for warrants, every night, if you were working in the night shift, the duty sergeant would give you about 12 warrants. And he said, if nothing goes on tonight, go out and see if you can serve these warrants. And so you go and knock on their doors at 1 o'clock in the morning. And out of the 12 warrants, once or twice a month, you actually came into contact with somebody and arrested them on the warrant, and you sat at home
right,
and were able to arrest an individual sitting at home using your computer.
Right, with the, of course, the gracious assistance from different agencies, and in particular the one down there in Florida.
Of course.
Yes, yeah, that's able to work up usable information in really just a matter of a couple of minutes and a couple of mouse clicks. Get a wanted fugitive off the streets.
You know, it is this larger issue, though, because every time we take a step in terms of social networking sites, every time we take that step, it opens up endless doors in terms of what social networking means. In essence, what we're talking about is criminal offenders, and people have this assumption that criminal offenders are not, quote-unquote, sophisticated enough to go on to Facebook and to conduct criminal activities, or go on to Facebook, MySpace, or the, you know, hundreds of other social media sites and try sex offenders, in this case, and to try to entice that young girl to meet him.
Absolutely.
But they do. They do it every single day.
Right, and it doesn't really take that savvy a person to click onto the web and to click onto a couple of sites and to create a profile and start meeting people.
And both of us agree that if we can do it, anybody can do it.
Absolutely, and that's one way that we're not all that different from our offenders. I mean, if we're on social networking sites, meeting and chatting with friends and meeting new friends and things like that, then chances are excellent that our offenders are doing the very same thing.
Well, there is a problem throughout the country in terms of cell phones in prisons. Mm-hmm. And when I say cell phones, again, it's a wake-up call. Somebody once said to me that the cell phone that I now carry, which is a smartphone, BlackBerry, mm-hmm. that BlackBerry that I carry now is as powerful as my desktop computer was 5 years ago.
That's absolutely true. I never thought I'd see the day that I would be speeding down the interstate and looking up information on tourist attractions. Mm. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, but the point is that if they have them inside of prisons, mm-hmm. and we're not just talking about a couple. In the prison systems throughout the country, they're reporting hundreds and hundreds in every mm-hmm. prison system. So if we're talking about offenders inside there, it's as if they have access to a laptop computer. It's as Absolutely. If they have access to the internet. They do have access to the internet, and they do have access to your child as your child is searching social media sites.
Right, and what we see a lot of times with a lot of our criminal offenders is that they're incredibly charismatic, and they can engage people very well in person and online, and a lot of times can get them get folks on the outside to do their bidding, legal or illegal activities.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is.
The charismatic, you know, many of the offenders who we supervise, they lost their calling. I mean, yes. So many of these individuals should have gone into sales.
I couldn't agree more.
A long time ago, it was like this individual. I mean, if you're going to hustle that hard, in terms of selling drugs, if you're going to hustle that hard in terms of conducting business over the internet, why didn't you just go into sales?
Absolutely. I actually told one of my offenders that one time, if he was that successful in recruiting and developing new business, then perhaps he should go into sales.
You know, I mean, they should have, they missed their calling quite some time ago. But we every time we discuss this, we open the door to other areas. So we have mm-hmm. offenders in the prison systems having access to handheld computers, what I call mm-hmm. cell phones. We're talking about the average offender out there floating through life, and they're interacting on MySpace, and they're interacting on Facebook, and there are hundreds of additional social media sites that they're interacting on. Mm-hmm. Gangs constantly have their own websites. Now, we're not talking about social media sites. We're talking about websites that they have created or had others create with them where they display acts, illegal acts.
Well, I mean, gangs, criminal activity, other people involved in criminal enterprise, you know, aside from it being illegal, it's just like a legitimate business. I would look for them to recruit business using Twitter or having a Facebook page or having their own presence on the web. It's they really market themselves the way that traditional businesses are doing it.
I market this entity, DC Public Safety, on Twitter all the time, mm-hmm. and I found that Twitter is probably one of the most powerful modalities mm-hmm. of getting the word out. Well, you go through Twitter and you search on specific keywords such as law enforcement, corrections, parole, mm-hmm. and probation, but you also search for the term crime. And there's been more than a couple what I consider to be fairly nefarious websites and Twitter sites. You know, so obviously these guys are on there. The final thing I wanted to get into. As an illustration as to how difficult this issue is, I saw a report on CNN yesterday as I was sitting at my desk. Yes, CNN runs all day in my office. and this is according to CNN, 20 million computers have been compromised by child sex offenders. Now, where they get this figure, I have no idea how valid it is, how real it is. I wouldn't have any idea. But what they're saying is that sex offenders are taking over your computers and using your computer to receive information, to receive obviously horrendously illegal, not just illegal, horrendously illegal photographs of children engaging in sex acts, but they're using your computer as the interface. So when the police knock on your door and tell you that, you know, they have a warrant for your arrest to search your computer in terms of child porn, and you're there struggling with, you know, what to say because you know it's absurd, it may be that it is this interface. So sex offenders, you know, they're sophisticated enough to take over somebody else's computer and to use that computer as an interface to get what it is that they need. So the point is that they're out there.
Absolutely. And what I have found is that you don't really have to have all that significant a technical knowledge to be able to do anything like that. All you have to do is be motivated to seek out the information, usually available on the web, that will tell you exactly, step by step, how to get these things done.
Well, I just copied down something called search engine optimization, which is basically website marketing, and sent it out to a bunch of my folks, which gives a step-by-step breakdown as to how to increase your presence on the internet.
Sure.
So if I can have instant access to that information and it was clear enough to me, then it would be clear enough to the I do. I mean, I'm an ex-cop with a couple college degrees. I'm not a technical person, as problems lately with a radio program improve. And so if I can do this stuff, anybody can do this stuff.
That's exactly true. I mean, I have no formal education or training in computers or, you know, anything specific like this. But, you know, you become motivated to search for offenders or to do a certain activity online. And the more you search out information, the more information you gain, and which leads you to more information, and somehow you get it done.
We are going to give Shannon's email address, and I'll talk about a manual that Shannon did, but I'm warning users right now that Shannon and I talk about this before we went on the program. We're going to give her email address out, but she developed a manual, which is sitting in front of me, and Shannon is also coming to my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency here in downtown Washington, D.C. We are a federal parole and probation entity. Shannon's going to come up and do some training for us, and she wrote this manual. Not everybody's going to be able to get a hold of this manual. You're going to have to send a letter on letterhead, and we're going to have to be sure that you are who you are before the manual goes out. But what Shannon did was to create a manual developing an investigative presence on the internet and talking about internet strategies. And we're not going to give out any secrets in terms of this conversation. But the point is that my guess is that folks in law enforcement, folks in parole and probation and corrections are going to need to learn how to do this, how to develop investigative identities on the internet, how to pass yourself off as somebody else, and how to the fact that there are, you know, different websites that you can use to search for information on just about anybody.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's the amount of information that folks are willing to share on the internet is absolutely staggering, and is beneficial not only for those of us in probation and parole, but also the law enforcement community using it as an investigative tool. It's absolutely incredible what you can find online that people willingly put there for themselves,
including the offender population.
Absolutely.
Now, again, I don't want to take this too far. Look, there are people out there who are under our supervision who are using the internet every day, and they're using it properly. It's not nefarious. I do not want to suggest that every person who has a criminal background and every person on parole and probation supervision is doing the wrong thing in terms of their computers. But there are plenty who are.
Sure, there are. You know, I had an offender one time who was placed on probation, and the first thing I did was go to look at his MySpace page, and he'd written a blog about how badly he'd messed up and was asking his friends on his MySpace page, to please assist him in doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, kind of gave me an additional insight into the mind of the offender that I meant to supervise.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have other offenders that you go and check their Facebook page, and they've posted pictures of themselves doing keg stands and other things that are clearly against the rules of probation and parole.
One of the things that I've tried to get across to my daughters is that whatever you put on, sooner or later you're going to apply for jobs in, you know, with the government or with the fairly responsible entities. You sitting there, you know, smoking, I'm not suggesting they do this, but
right.
I'm just using this for illustrative purposes. You sitting there smoking a joint with a bottle of Jack Daniels with your friends all there is not going to be looked upon very kindly 5 years from now when you go for that government job. Or when you go for any job, for that matter. So what you post on the internet stays there forever. It does not disappear.
That's right. And you would not believe the amount of folks who've even applied for internships with our offices that have been turned down simply because they show themselves engaging in illegal activities on their Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. So people have this natural inclination to brag about who they are and what they are. And if your bragging rights includes criminal activity, I mean, gangs will post, gangs will create websites or have websites created for them. I mean, I've even created a website. It's not that difficult.
Right.
You know, gangs will post pictures of them with loot taken from a robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if that's not incredibly stupid, I don't know what is, but they don't seem to understand what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that whatever you put on the internet stays there forever.
Well, I think people operate under the assumption a lot of times that the information that they put on there is going to be seen only by folks who know them. But in reality, it's out there and it's available for public consumption by anyone.
Which is one of the reasons why children, and when I say children, it could be anybody under the age of 18.
Absolutely.
That's one of the reasons why they believe that that communication with this anonymous person through a chat room becomes a private matter.
Yes, they do, and they develop this false sense of security that they know who this person is, even though they've never met them. They have no idea who this person might be in real life. They develop this intimacy with somebody that they're chatting with and operate under the false assumption that they can trust them.
We're going to reintroduce Shannon Blaylock. She is a parole and probation officer with the Kentucky Department of Corrections Division of Parole and Probation. She is a parole and probation officer. She works in parole and probation intelligence, and she works in fugitive apprehension. Now, I'm going to give Shannon's email address in terms of the manual that Shannon developed. But once again, you're going to have to, once that contact has been established, you're going to have to get something to her on letterhead and a superior Shannon or staff can get back in touch with that individual before Shannon will be sending out a copy of the manual. That's Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N dot Blaylock, B-L-A-K, B-L-A-L-O-C-K, I'm sorry, B-L-A-L-O-C-K at KentuckyKY.gov. Let me see if I can stumble through this once again. Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-O-N dot B-L-A-L-O-C-K at KY.gov. Did I get
that's
it correct?
Right.
Okay,
yes, that's
cool.
It.
Cool. Okay, and so the manual that you put together, in essence, reminds all of us to create investigative identities. In other words, so we can operate on the internet and we can cloak ourselves so, you know, it doesn't say Kentucky Department of Corrections.
Right. You know, you're not going to get now, there are instances where you can get some very useful information by going onto the web as your agency.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Kentucky, Division of Probation and Parole, we have a page on MySpace that's dedicated to our probation and parole fugitives.
Mm-hmm.
And we received an incredible amount of tips and helpful information from folks. Members of the community who go onto our MySpace site, see the folks on there,
mm-hmm.
and then give us usable information because they don't want absconded or fugitives
of course.
In their community any more than we do.
And parents want their kids captured without violence and without them, the police,
sure.
coming to their house at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely, and I've always told folks that it definitely behooves them to turn themselves in so that they, you know, that they don't put themselves or their family in danger, and of course they don't pick up additional charges.
Sure, of course.
In terms of looking around for violators of conditions of supervision, violators of the law, and fugitives, chances are you really don't are not going to have very much luck going on as Lynn Sipes, former cop. And so you might want to go on there under an assumed identity.
Mm-hmm. And basically the manual provides suggestions in terms of how
sure.
to go about that. And mm-hmm. the there are various sites on the web. Now, I didn't know this. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not a technical person. Lord knows I'm not a technical person. Ask my wife. I'm not a technical person. Where you know, if you search Google, it is referred to as the surface web. But
wow.
there are websites there that search the deep web. And the surface web is 20% of what's there on the internet. So when you search Google, you're only searching for 20% of what's on the internet. There are ways of searching the deep web. And there are websites out there that are construed to find individuals that are available to the public and cost no money.
That's correct. I've had the pleasure of going to speak to several different agencies, one of them was with the HIDAs, the high intensity drug trafficking
yep,
areas,
yep.
and they had not ever heard of social network search engines, where you can search for people specifically on a number of social networks instead of going to each individual site and typing in a search, and so it's very time efficient. to be able to use a social networking site, social networking search engine to look for the target of your investigation.
So it searches basically across the web.
Absolutely, yeah. And not only will it search, I've got a variety of different search engines in the manual, and not only does it search social networking sites, but like you said, it will search into the deep web to see if maybe your offender has left footprints somewhere that you didn't know about, and then can follow up from there.
You know, there comes a point where it is probably, at one time, you know, as a police officer, as a parole and probation agent, as a correctional officer, you developed your reputation in terms of your shoe leather. How much time you spent in the community with your ear to the ground, talking to a wide variety of people. Now, I'm not going to suggest that sitting there and searching social media sites is more important than getting out into the community and talking to employers,
no,
talking to the girlfriend,
yeah.
talking to the mother, talking to the brother, talking to the person who lives with that individual, because they are an incredible source of information regarding that offender. And a lot of times you can take action to circumvent something happening. But it seems to me that equally important now is this presence on the internet and the ability and the knowledge of searching internet sites, websites, social media sites to figure out what your person is doing.
Absolutely. Whenever I do this discussion with groups, I talk about the concept of virtual home visits. And it's not, and what I talk about in there is, of course, it will never take the place of in-person home visits. But what you're doing is looking at the person's virtual home. Folks who create social network accounts decorate it any way they want to with music and pictures. They invite the friends that they want in there. They display the art and, other things that are of interest to them in there. And so whenever you go to do a physical home visit for an offender, you are getting the very best version of that offender, how they think you want them to act. But a lot of times whenever you visit their virtual home, you see the offender in the light that they really are or the way that they want to be seen by friends. And so it just gives you an additional way, an additional insight to your offender so that you can more effectively supervise the ones that are on supervision and, of course, a way to apprehend the folks who've absconded.
Now, there are people out there who are simply saying, okay, fine, Leonard, Shannon, this is all well and interesting, but if I'm not incredibly or completely stupid, I'm simply going to use another name.
Right. Yeah, that's, a lot of times they will do that, but we can gain information from, pre-sentence investigations, look on friends of friends list, and just look for photographs that look familiar. I know a lot of folks who don't sign up for social network sites under their actual name. They sign up under their assumed name, like Happy or Bull or
Cool Breeze.
Crappy.
How many guys did I know back in the 70s it was all Cool Breeze? The
cool
70s
breeze,
and 80s, yeah.
Please. And the interesting thing about all of these social networking sites is that you can search not only by first and last name, but you can search by screen name or email address. You can even browse by location. And so if you know that your offender is 32 years old, 6'1", and is a white guy who smokes, then you can narrow down the search pretty close on places like MySpace.
And my guess is that within the alias file that we all keep within various parole and probation and law enforcement agencies, my guess is that people are creatures of habit. They're going to go back and use one of the previous aliases that they've given themselves throughout the years.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if somebody has Cool Breezes out there, and I know there are 10 billion Cool Breezes, but at least there were back in the 70s and 80s, it is ordinarily you can take a look at a person's rap sheet. You can take a look at a person's parole and probation record, and there are maybe 5 or 6 or 7 different aliases in there, and those aliases can lead you to that individual.
Yeah, and not only that, but I've found that a lot of times our offenders will tattoo their various aliases or nicknames onto their body somewhere. So just take a look at prison records or pre-sentence investigation reports and see what names they've got tattooed on their body.
Now, all of that is brings up this question, I suppose. At what point do we simply say, well, wait a minute, we can't do both? The average parole and probation agent in this country carries very large caseloads.
Sure.
Now, here it's a so-so because we're a federal agency. We're, thank the Lord, that we have the money to keep caseloads all of our caseloads are 50 to 1 or less. So their specialized mm-hmm. caseloads could go as low as 25 to 1. Now, but still, even if you've got a great caseload or even if you have 150 offenders, taking on the internet presence, doing that is complicated enough and time-consuming enough to the point where one almost has got to take prominence over the other.
Yeah, and in Kentucky, what we have done is I supervised a caseload for about 3 years, and then after that, after a meeting of the statewide meeting of probation and parole supervisors and wardens, whenever I demonstrated what all could be accomplished on the web, they created a specialized position for me to be able to do this for probation and parole and the Department of Corrections.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what I do full time. But other than that, while I was supervising a caseload, I would pick it up here and there whenever I had a little bit of slack. But of course, I was already pretty computer literate and savvy with social networking sites. What I would encourage folks to do is just sit down and play with it. It's going to come quicker to you than you think if you're not familiar with it already.
Well, if it's government, and again, I feel bad in saying this because we provide a ton of training here, almost too much training, it seems. But a lot of government agencies simply are not as fortunate as we are, and they don't have the money. And I would imagine the overwhelming majority of people who are going to be learning this, it's going to be through their own volition, through their own efforts.
Yeah, that's true. And then, of course, you also run into the roadblocks of several government agencies.
They won't let you have access to social media sites. Right.
Yeah, they've not recognized the value in that, and particularly for folks who are supervising a specialized caseload of sex offenders. You know, it's absolutely amazing the amount of information that even our sex offenders will put on adult-type dating sites. I was looking at one day, and one of them used a booking photo from a jail as his profile photo on on an adult dating site.
Okay, well, that's incredibly stupid, but
yes, but you know, they will do that.
Well, you know, and the other part of it will be in the larger discussion of what I call handheld computers, what other people mm-hmm. call their iPhones.
Right.
Or their Blackberries, or the Droid. You know, it's just a little too much to comprehend when, you know, it's not your mom's computer, it's not the computer in your house, it's not the computer in the library, it's the fact that everybody out there is walking around with a computer strapped to themselves. And so the sex offender says, well, George, let me borrow your handheld computer so I can go on to one of the social media sites and see if I can track myself down a vulnerable young person. But how do you handle that? That's impossible for most of us. I mean, it's just an explosion of opportunities, which means an explosion of responsibilities that my guess, and I think the guess of most criminologists is that the collective guess is that we're not prepared for that.
No, we really are not. I mean, in terms of the training that, you know, that often agencies receive is outdated, or maybe just a little bit, they're just a step behind what offenders are able to accomplish, especially with gaining access to the internet on their cell phones. I know in Kentucky, we don't allow our offenders to have cell phone plans that do put them on the internet. Of course, there's no way of guaranteeing that they're not going over to a neighbor's computer or anywhere else, or borrowing a phone from the, you know, somebody on the street and trying to acquire new victims that way.
Yeah, because I can see doing that with sex offenders, but if you mm-hmm. did that with the regular people on supervision, they're going to complain immediately that what you're doing is blocking them from legitimate job opportunities.
That's true. Yeah.
So it becomes a very sticky wicket that we, all of us collectively in parole and probation throughout the country, and for that matter throughout the world, are going to have to be examining and stumbling with. But Shannon Blaylock is coming to our agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, and you're going to provide our folks with all of the training that you have so we can pretty much take it from there and to guide us. And I'm really looking forward to you coming up, Shannon.
Thank you.
Our guest today has been Shannon Blaylock. She is a parole and probation officer with the Kentucky Department of Corrections. Division of Parole and Probation, Parole and Probation Officer, Parole and Probation Intelligence, and Fugitive Apprehension, and now a self-taught internet expert. Her email address is Shannon S. Well, aren't we all? Shannon. blalock@ky.gov. But after that initial introduction by email, you're going to have to send a letter, a regular snail mail letter on letterhead with the contact of your supervisor so we can do the proper checks. And if so, if you can prove who you are, Shannon will include a copy of her manual. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. Once again, we are extremely appreciative of all of your letters, comments, phone calls, email comments, and we're up to, thanks to you, 230,000 requests on a monthly basis for the television, radio, blog, and transcripts portion at media.csosa.gov. We really appreciate you being with us today, and please have yourself a pleasant day.